The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But now, as the Israelis continue to bomb Lebanon in spite of US requests to stay their hand, Israel has also allowed a small increase in aid into Gaza on foot of a mild threat from the US about withholding military funding. Meanwhile, it's likely that Israel will bomb Iran before the US presidential election. We're joined by Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. Scott, good morning.
Very good morning to you, Pat.
So I don't know what order to take these particular developments, but first of all, perhaps most pressing, we don't know when it'll happen, but it will happen. Israel will bomb Iran.
In a sense, Pat, I'm going to tell you that for me, Gaza and Lebanon are more important, and I hope we get to those. But let me explain why. You know, ever since Iran a few weeks ago lobbed those 181 ballistic missiles at Israel, and most of those missiles were sort of a demonstration strike, but there was one Israeli airbase, Nevatim, which did take significant damage. Ever since then, the Netanyahu government has been saying, we're going to get them. And there's been this back and forth between them and the Americans, at least in public, where the Americans are saying, well, don't hit Iran's nuclear program. Don't hit Iran's oil industry, because that, of course, would affect global prices. And the Israelis say, oh, okay, but, you know, military sites. We'll hit Iranian military sites. It's sort of a sort of Damocles that the Israelis are holding over Iran and holding over the region. And I think while I don't want to downplay any risk of a direct Israel-Iran confrontation, the immediate effect is it gives Benjamin Netanyahu breathing space on the other two fronts. You know, he can expand the attacks in Lebanon. He can maintain and indeed escalate the attacks on Gaza, with most of the casualties being civilians. And he can always say, look, you know, you don't want to hold me back because Iran's the big threat here. Iran's the big enemy. And that biggest audience for that message is not the Americans. It's the Israeli public, because the one real challenge to Netanyahu that would stop his open-ended wars would be if a majority of the Israeli public or a significant section of it said this is unacceptable because we have no end game. Iran gives Netanyahu a pretext to say, you don't need an end game. You just need me to protect you.
Now, the equations used by the military or perhaps even the war cabinet in determining what part of Lebanon they're going to bomb next, they'll say, here we have a functioning Hezbollah. We don't know what level that functioning might be, but it's worth taking out an apartment block just to get that guy. I mean, I just don't get that kind of calculation, because it does seem like a recipe for war crimes.
Right. I mean, I'm going to go back to the slogan from Vietnam era with the United States, Pat. You kill them all and let God sort them out. And I'm sorry to sound so callous, but what you've got in both Gaza and in many parts of Lebanon is you've got densely populated areas. Now, militaries operate in those densely populated areas. So the Israelis can always say, if they hit southern Beirut, you know, which is one of the most crowded cities in the world, well, Hezbollah operate out of there. And they do. That's where Hezbollah's headquarters are. They can go across southern Lebanon and hit towns and villages. They killed several people in a town yesterday, including the mayor. And they can say, well, there were Hezbollah folks nearby. We've seen that in Gaza for more than a year. And it just comes down to a fundamental that in an open-ended war, there are no restrictions really on the targets, because the Israeli response, and I'm sure if you talk to the Israeli embassy, they're going to give you this, is, well, Hamas are hiding among the population. Hezbollah are amongst the population. And that pretext will be used inevitably with no halt to the casualties.
On one level, you look at the Israeli capabilities and you say, when it came to the pager attack and the walkie-talkie explosions, there was a sort of an element of forensics about all of that. Although innocent people were killed who were nearby, and people were maimed and people lost the sight of an eye or whatever, had brain injuries on foot of that, it was kind of limited to people around those who were carrying the means of communication for Hezbollah. Dropping bunker buster bombs on apartment buildings seems so crude for a race that claims to be as intelligent and smart as the Israelis.
Yeah, look, there are a lot of good Israeli people out there. And a lot of people in Israel don't want this. That's the first thing to say. But I would say from the standpoint of the Israeli leadership, you got to a point in Gaza where you were trying to, quote, destroy Hamas. Those are Benjamin Netanyahu's words, not mine. And to destroy Hamas, you had to be crude. And to give you one example that goes all the way back to, you know, last autumn in 2023, hundreds of people were killed in the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza because there happened to be a building which did have some Hamas personnel nearby, but they used these big bunker buster bombs. Here we are a year later, and you haven't destroyed Hamas. Hamas personnel are still in the area. So what do you do again? You hit the Jabalia refugee camp and areas nearby. You'll probably know the gruesome footage, it's just horrible, too horrible to view, of people being burned alive in their beds when a hospital is set aflame by that. And again, every time I go to the Israeli media about this, they'll say, oh, well, there's claims that civilians died, but we hit some Hamas operatives. They'll do the same thing in Lebanon.
But you imagine if you take the parallel when we had the troubles in Northern Ireland and you have the IRA and the loyalist paramilitaries and they're a problem for the British government. So what we'll do is we'll raise Belfast and Derry to the ground. That'll sort it. I mean, that's what the Israelis are doing.
Yeah, I can't give you a response in back. I can't make that two-sided on your argument, Pat, because you're absolutely spot on. All I can do is take it a step further and say, all right, if you're going to carry on this mass bombing, these airstrikes, and going beyond that, if you're going to cut off aid, which has sparked the latest mild rebuke from the United States and threaten to starve people out, what exactly is the goal that you're trying to achieve? You know, we know that for all the deaths, we know that for all the damage, we know that for all the abuse of law that took place in the conflict over Northern Ireland over decades, at the end of the 1990s, you got to a point where you could have some measure of reconciliation precisely because you had not completely leveled the area. But the Israeli government, in terms of Benjamin Netanyahu specifically, and in terms of the Lebanon operations, the Israeli military, including the Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, they don't want reconciliation. I have to be very open with your listeners here. They don't want a peace settlement in terms of everyone's going to get together and sign an agreement for mutual security. They want the destruction of these organizations, Hamas and Hezbollah. There are other reasons beyond this, Netanyahu's political and legal future, but fundamentally, there's no idea that this can end in coexistence with large parts of the Lebanese and Gazan societies. And if you don't believe in that coexistence as an endpoint, you have nothing left except the ongoing destruction.
Now, the idea of, you said a mild rebuke, you know, the Israelis are to let more aid in, or, and this has got to be done within 30 days. 30 days, if you do the calculation, is, you know, a week and a half after the American presidential election. If you don't do that, we may cut your military funding. I mean, that's almost a joke.
At one level, this is just for show, and you're right. You nailed it on the head that 30 days, in effect, has given Netanyahu a further breathing space because he knows nothing's going to happen in 30 days. So you can expand the bombing. You can cut off aid for the next 30 days and have more people die from starvation. And the Americans are going to say, well, we're still reviewing the situation. We were at this point last year. You might remember, earlier this year, you might remember when there were seven aid workers that were killed from the U.S.-backed organization World Central Kitchen.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And the Biden administration said, oh, you know, so we've got some American organization, we've got some people killed here. Well, Israel, you're going to have to let some aid through because this is just – and for a few days, the Israelis had big press releases. Oh, look at how much aid has come through the crossings. In effect, not that much aid came through, but it was enough to tide them over. Same thing happens this time. The Israelis have announced they let 50 aid trucks in, all right? 50 aid trucks is just a drop in the ocean of need when you've got almost 2 million Gazans displaced. But the Israelis will say, look, we understand what you're saying. And then after the election, everybody will review the situation. If Donald Trump is elected in the United States, the Israelis know that he's not going to do anything to hold them back. He just simply won't. If there's a Kamala Harris administration, it's a little bit more interesting because Harris does give lip service to the idea of protection of Gaza civilians. Whether she would back that up with an actual meaningful step And by that, we mean limiting military aid on Israel. It's a bit of an open question. So this 30 days, in a sense, just simply treads water until we see where we are politically at the end of November.
You know that expression, bombing them back to the Stone Age. Is that they probably can't do that in Lebanon. The territory is too big. But in Gaza, is that effectively what they're trying to do?
They have. I mean, they have. I mean, Gaza, for all the, you know, the Israeli blockade and for all the restrictions economically, you know, had a functioning, if limited, economy. It had a society. It had to always operate under the governance of Hamas, which was a serious issue. You know, Hamas were not exactly the most open government in terms of allowing civil exchange. But it had a functioning society. You know, the Israelis have just simply ripped, or the Israeli government has ripped that apart. You know, 90% of people in Gaza are displaced. You're now talking about more than 42,000 who have been killed. That's more than 1% of the population. You know, map that onto Ireland and think if 1% of the population had been killed here. And what you're talking about, what, 50,000 would be your death toll at this point. So, you know, Gaza, at a best case scenario, would take many, many years, perhaps even decades, to recover. But we're not even going to get a best case scenario out of this. Now, let me take you to Lebanon, though, Pat, because that is serious in a slightly different way, but one that I think needs to be highlighted. This is a country that was in a civil war for 15 years, from 1975 to 1990. Very destructive. Many, many tens of thousands of people killed, ripped the country apart. The country came out of that, and there was some hope that you would get recovery. But since 2019, Lebanon has been almost bankrupt. Serious economic issues, serious corruption, serious issues of political leadership before what happened between Hamas and Israel. What Israel is doing is it's exacerbating the prospect that Lebanon completely collapses. And when you have that collapse, you do have that prospect in a country which has had religious tensions, social tensions, and political tensions of a revived civil war. We saw that when Israel went into Lebanon in the 80s with very, very serious consequences.
So the theory here would be create a civil war. They fight each other. They're too busy to damage us.
I don't think when it comes to Benjamin Netanyahu or the Israeli military, I don't think they game it out in terms of what the consequences are here. You know, Netanyahu, and I'm going to bring it back to basics again, when Hamas gave him, and remember, Hamas's mass killings in Israel started this cycle of violence more than a year ago. When Hamas did that, it gave Netanyahu a lifeline because he was in political trouble in Israel. He split the country by trying to quash the judiciary, and he was under threat of bribery charges. Now, he's got to keep the war going to avoid that threat recurring. So I don't think the future of Lebanon is number one on his wish list. In terms of the Israeli military, they just simply want to, quote, destroy Hezbollah. They disagree with Netanyahu on how Gaza's going, but by going into Lebanon, Netanyahu gets this reconciliation with his military, eases the pressure on him, and that's why this is open-ended. It's not that they want Lebanon to recover, but they don't even care if Lebanon collapses because of their more immediate goals in terms of where they stand in Israel.
Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. Thank you very much for joining us.
News Talk's Cash Machine. The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.